I'll have to say, to start off, I was very impressed by the all the blurbs. Heavily blurbed book.
Oh,
and
good.
I think I know why. Dr. Swift, would you like to get right on the microphone?
Sure, I'm right on the microphone, right?
Would you like to hear my theory of the blurbs?
Sure.
Well, because you called it Pat and Dick, maybe your publishers were afraid it wouldn't sound serious enough, like a genuine work of history. So therefore, you brought out the heavy guns, and it seems like every American historian and historian of the White House has contributed a blurb to your book.
Well, the actual story is that I just started sending it out, and people said I should send it to other people, and in the end, there were 15 blurbs.
I know. And there were good ones.
And I admit to being a blurbaholic.
Let me give a sort of proper introduction Dr. Will Swift, who is a psychologist in marital therapy, which I assume means you're a marriage counselor.
Right.
Is that
Among
possible?
Other things, yes.
Among other things. And he has written two previous books of note, The Roosevelts and the Royals. Mm-hmm. Was that last year or the year before?
That came out in 2004.
Really? That long ago?
It's been 10 years now.
Wow. And The Kennedys Amidst the Gathering Storm, which was about the Kennedys in England, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the story of the Kennedy family's coming of age during the ambassadorship of Joe Kennedy, 1938 to 1940 in London as the war came on.
Well, at least I did not embarrass myself by getting on the wrong continent or something. So tell us how the writing of this book, Pat and Dick, came to be.
Sure. I decided that, first of all, I've been doing marital counseling and therapy since 1970, so I've always been interested in the story of long-term marital relationships because it's a fascinating thing. We have two individuals and all the different phases that they go through individually and as a couple. So I thought it would be great to do a story of a marriage to show the very many shifts that a couple has to navigate successfully or unsuccessfully. And I wanted, as a presidential historian, I wanted to do the story of a presidential marriage. And as I began to look, I realized that the only marriage that had not been done was the Nixon marriage. And the reason, and this was very surprising, that the Nixons had been dead for 20 years. And so, as I say, no one had dared to do this marriage because the reputation was so negative and that they had a miserable marriage.
Pat Nixon often looked kind of put upon and unhappy, I thought. There was sort of that cloud hanging over her head, I always thought. Mm-hmm. That was my perception.
Well, it's interesting because she and her husband were opposites. Pat shined in small group settings and with individuals, and she was very beloved and very warm-hearted and very playful. But when she was a very private person, and she didn't feel comfortable with the attention of big crowds, although she got... Over the time that she was in the White House, she actually became more comfortable with it to the point that she became somewhat of an international star. So there is that perception of her that is based on certain appearances, but it was not universal. Sometimes she could enjoy herself in public quite a bit, but she was very good in private. And Richard Nixon was excellent in public in large crowds, and he could memorize things and he could speak extemporaneously, but he could be very awkward in private. So they were mirror opposites in that regard. Mm.
Isn't part of the problem with Pat's profile was that she really didn't talk much to the press or very seldom, which the way in contemporary presidencies, the first ladies take a much more active role in their yes. husbands' presidencies. It's hard to think of any time that she was mentioned except for the famous Republican cloth coat.
Well, actually, she took quite a role she and Richard Nixon, very interestingly, waged a PR campaign together starting in 1969, 1970, and they made several documentaries with her as First Lady, traveling, the first documentary told the story of her travels to the Far East and portrayed her as a warm, caring, involved person. So that was to counter the initial image of her as not an active first lady. And then
that was a TV documentary.
That was a TV documentary on NBC with Nancy Dickerson.
Where Jackie took you on a tour of the furniture, Pat actually took you to a foreign country.
Pat took you around the world. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and
pretty impressive.
She did another documentary a year later where she opened up certain new areas of national parks, and she was shown playing with a polo mallet and all kinds of things like that. So she actually came across increasingly as a very enjoyable and engaging person. And this was a specific battle that the Dixons were waging because, A, there was a talk. Judith Viorst in the New York Times had described their marriage as dry as dust, and a number of people had described her as essentially an inadequate first lady. So she actually did much more than you would think in terms of going out there. And then when she started doing foreign travels, she traveled to Peru in 1970 to help deal with an international catastrophe, a major earthquake in the Andes. She got a lot of publicity for that.
She went by herself without the president?
Yes, she was the first first lady who was sent by the president to deal with an international catastrophe. And she actually taught the First Lady of Peru how to go in the ruins like Queen Elizabeth during the Blitz and console people. And then in 1972, he sent her on a 10-day trip to Africa by herself. She consulted with heads of three different countries. She was the first First Lady to attend the inauguration of a foreign leader. The president of Liberia, and she addressed the Ghanaian assembly and got great laughter from them in terms of some of the things she said. And she was treated like a conquering hero. So she was emerging by 1972 as quite an extraordinary first lady because she always loved travel and adventure. And I say one of the great tragedies of Watergate is that all got shut down. And in the last year of the presidency, she withdrew, although she spent the first year of the Watergate investigation defending her husband in public. Interestingly enough, she did do that.
So you think the popular impression is largely based on that dreadful last year where she essentially stayed out of the spotlight completely during Watergate.
Yes, I think the whole Nixon marriage, which remember was 53 years and had many stages, they were in public life from 1946 to 1974. The whole marriage is seen through the lens of Watergate. And she's seen as a victim, a sad person, and he's seen as a crook and a horrible person. But as the vice presidential couple from 1952, 53 to 60, they were extraordinary. They were the first second couple that were very popular. They made several international trips that were... They spent 70 days in the Far East. She broke all precedents because she became very involved in women's rights and getting women to be able to go to events that they'd never been invited to before. 1957, they went to Africa. And there's a great story because it was 100 degrees and it was a stinking, rotten market. And she was there. And the tradition was that you serve a huge, ugly fish eye to the guest. And so she was given this large fisheye, and the aide who was with her for the first time, Don Hughes, watched as she popped it in her mouth, swallowed it down with a smile, and he looked at her and he said, "What was that?" She said, "That's just how we do it." And she became legendary for her stamina, and she was actually called in the New York Times, of all places, a phenomenon of her times and a diplomat in high heels. So she was really quite famous and accomplished a lot. And the Nixons had a mission, which was to go abroad and sell the world on democracy and freedom and that individual people could have the right to liberty and justice. So it was a very strong crusade that they waged, and you wouldn't know that much about them in that era because it's all filtered through Watergate.
Right. And, of course, by Republican standards today, Richard Nixon seems very much in the mainstream up until things went sour.
Yes, he certainly does, and he would be seen as almost like a big government liberal.
Right.
He didn't really...
Well, he did famously say, "We're all Keynesians now."
Yes.
So, you know, it's kind of like you can imagine saying that at a Republican convention right now, you'd probably be shot.
Exactly, and he really didn't dismantle that many of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society programs in the end, and of course he's actually Obama has been recently heard to say that, in fact, this week, that he thought Nixon was more liberal than he is.
Mm-hmm. And then the conventional wisdom always was that Richard Nixon was more interested in foreign policy.
Yes.
That's partly why he didn't interfere with what LBJ had started. And that seems to be demonstrated by what you said about both Pat and Dick wanting to, he wanting to send Pat out to explore and promote international democracy.
Yes, but he also, although he had a passion for certain domestic programs as well, and he did an awful lot for civil rights that is not acknowledged. And interesting enough, after he first came back to New York 4 years after the resignation, a group of black leaders threw him a special black tie dinner at the Waldorf Astoria to celebrate all that he'd accomplished. So he had a strong interest in the environment. Of course, he started the EPA, and he, to some degree, he worked with there were Democratic Congresses, so he worked with them because he realized he needed their support for his foreign policy. But he had strong interests himself, so I think it's he's a much broader person than we give
sure.
him credit for.
But I guess the real revisionism of your book is the relationship between the president and his wife.
Well, I would say that's okay. I would say the real revisionism is a human picture of Richard Nixon as a full human being who had a tender heart, who was sentimental, loved his wife dearly, as of Pat as a very strong individual, not plastic or passive Pat, but a strong individual who Richard Nixon considered as stronger than he was and was many times the backbone when he was about to give up. I can give you some stories if you like. And that the marriage was a much warmer, more connected marriage than people say, and that they were really a team in many ways.
Well, you're a marital therapist, and at the same time, you've never had them in your office.
As far as you know.
I can tell you're not old enough.
don't be so sure. I started practice in New York in 1978. That's a year or two before he moved to New York, so don't be so sure. I couldn't say, but.
Well, then I'll withdraw the question.
Well, you can ask them.
So theoretically, you've never had them in the office together. How do you feel your role as a / marital therapist historian in applying, do you apply the terminology of your one aspect of your career to this other aspect?
I do, but I'm very careful because I think the worst thing in a biography is to make it sound like a case study.
Right, so it's not psychohistory, in other words.
It's not psychohistory, but I use a lot of psychological understanding to get the essence of the characters and to talk about the phases of a relationship. And I do talk a lot about that aspect because, for instance, I quote Tolstoy. He had a wonderful quote. He said...
Very
quotable guy. He said... the secret to happiness in a marriage is not compatibility, but how you handle incompatibility. Mm-hmm. And the Nixons are famously known as being incompatible because we know that he loved politics a lot more than she did. But I think the fascinating thing is not that, but how they figured out a way to make that work despite the fact they had that difference.
And that's not unusual. I mean, there's been other cases of politicians whose wives are somewhat reluctant to be in that role as a politician's wife. I mean, I remember, at least it seems to be part of the publicity that comes with every campaign.
Right.
Is that the wife is always the one who isn't so sure she wants this to happen to their family. With exceptions, of course. It seemed like Mrs. Romney was totally behind his campaign at one point.
Yes, and I think Lady Bird Johnson was definitely a very political figure, mm-hmm. As an example. I think Jackie Kennedy definitely was not. She did not like politics and she stayed out of as much as she could. But even by the end of Jack Kennedy's life, she was starting to get involved in going campaigning with him as she was in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, just one side note, I'm blogging for Psychology Today. And one of the articles I'm thinking of doing for them is a story about the presidential marriages. You know, not one presidential couple has ever gotten divorced. And I think that makes a very interesting story. Like, what is it about the experience they have that bonds them together, and what can we learn from that? And
power.
P- Well, I think it's not so much set of values and wanting to leave a legacy to the world, and that is very binding for a couple. So
I read somewhere recently that, and it could be pure rumor, that Hillary did draw papers at one point for divorce.
Right. I don't know that.
And then decided to pursue her political career further and withdrew them because, you know, it doesn't help to be divorced.
Was this while he was still in office?
No, this was after.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, but one of the things that the Albany Times Union asked me is what book might I like to do next? And I said my ideal scenario was that President Clinton, who has a copy of my book, and Mrs. Clinton would contact me after they see some of the reviews coming up and say that we would like you to do the story of our marriage and we will give you access to our private papers, but only after the campaign is over.
Yeah, or when they're both gone.
Right, exactly.
I'm sure they don't. Oh, that's what was interesting about this thing I read about the papers, because if those divorce papers were actually drawn up, there is a list of the presumed, what should we call them?
Trysts?
Yeah, whatever.
Encounters.
Yeah, encounters.
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 You know, that was part of the paper. Of course, right. They're sealed, being what they are.
You know, Jackie Kennedy was supposedly, the story about her is in 1956 or whatever, she wanted to divorce Jack Kennedy, and Joe Kennedy came to her and say, gave her $1 million and told her, stick it out.
So. Yeah. Well, he stuck it out. Rose stuck it out, of course.
I wanted to ask you, I see here that you were the keynote speaker during the formal celebration of Richard Nixon's 101st birthday.
Right.
On January 11th, 2014, at the Nixon Presidential Library and Foundation.
Right.
And I assume you had access to a lot of material, and that the family, the heirs, or whoever, gave you access to this?
Yes.
Trisha and I can't remember the other daughter.
And Julie. Well, it's an interesting story because you can imagine the Nixon Foundation, with all the attacks on Nixon, is extremely protective and of anyone coming. And here comes a liberal Northeast Democrat who's also a shrink. And there have been written some very sort of bad pathology biographies of Nixon. So they were like running for the hills when I first arrived. And what my job was to be like Richard Nixon, was to endure, to persist, to continue to convince them that I was serious. And fortunately, some of the archives had just been opened up. Pat Nixon's papers had been opened up the previous year. Wonderful letters that she wrote to her best friend that really revealed her personality, all of which are in the book. And then during the time that I was writing the book, they released the some of the courtship letters, and then also they released some of the wonderful, tender, loving wartime letters that Nixon wrote. And finally, they just recently, before I finished the book, they released the press office materials of the First Lady. So I was getting, on the one side, a lot of archival material that was new. On the other side, it was very slowly, slowly, slowly being introduced to people. And I learned the first thing I could not do and could really never do is ask questions about Watergate, because that would send them all running to the hills. And so very slowly, I got to speak to people like Dwight Chapin, the secretaries, a number of staff members, and the foundation people. Every time, at first, they were very standoffish, and then each time I came, we would have lunch. And I got to meet one of what I call the man who's the Robert Caro of Richard Nixon, who's writing 4 volumes, who's the most respected scholar. And he basically realized quite soon that not only was I not doing a hatchet job, but that I was a serious historian.
What's his name?
His name is Irv Gelman, and he's coming out later this year with his second volume on the vice presidency, which is going to completely revise the whole story of the Nixon-Eisenhower relationship. And so he began to tell them that they should trust me. And it took me 2 years, but I did have lunch with Ed Cox, and we spent 2.5 hours at lunch. And after about 2 hours, I gave him a few pages of my book, and he edited them on the spot in a fancy restaurant. And then I asked him, could I give a list of questions for him and Tricia to deal with? And he agreed, and they carefully went over them, and then very carefully monitored how I interpreted the responses. And so I put that in the book, and I'm very grateful to them. Julie had written her own book about her mother, and she really wasn't interested in, you know, saying, and she'd said what she had to say, but she helped in the background.
Have you heard from them about the book?
I actually have. I've received lovely notes from both of them thanking me for and appreciating the book. So that was very nice. I didn't know if I would, but in the last few weeks, I've heard from both of them, yes. And from Ed Cox more frequently.
Did Pat Nixon have a alcohol problem in her later years?
That's a common myth about her. I think, you know, she set herself up for that because she would sometimes deny that she drank at all or smoked because she wanted to be, she was a very perfectionistic person. She felt the image of the First Lady should be very dignified. So she denied the normal things she did. And look, she drank a little bit more during the White House, during the Watergate years. Mm-hmm. But who wouldn't, I say? who wouldn't, I say? And he drank a little more.
Including
us. And I talked to a number of people about Richard Nixon's drinking and about her drinking. And I think they did drink more, but I don't think they had an serious alcohol problem in the White House. I think they were coping with some very difficult times.
You know, you've told us some things that make this sound really intriguing, and now I can't wait to read it. But what I neglected to tell our listeners is that they're going to have access to you at 3 p.m. Oh. at the Chatham Public Library on Saturday, because
yes.
Dr. Will Swift will be there talking about the book, maybe reading from the book.
I will be talking about the book. I will be reading from the book. There will also be a party and book signing afterwards. And I'm going to reveal four wonderful surprises, which I'm not going to reveal now because I want to save it for then.
Maybe a fifth one you could
But say this has been the most exciting week of my literary career, and some wonderful things have happened around this book. And I plan to announce those at the library talks. Everyone has to come.
And
so there's a movie in the works.
Of course, obviously.
Chatham Public Library is at 11 Woodbridge Avenue in Chatham.
Right, and it's at 3 p.m.
3 p.m., that's right.
Right, and they have a whole series, an ongoing series of speakers, and this is the second time I've talked for them, so I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, I did the first talk, of course, at the Nixon Library, and that was quite an experience because I was talking right after the head of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the mayor. There was wreath layings. There was Marine Navy bands. It was quite a formal ceremony. And this is a much more relaxing thing to talk before. Many of the people in the audience will be people who helped me with this book through emotional support or otherwise. So I look forward to it.
You know, I made that comment about your blurbs earlier on, and part of what's impressive about them, of course, is who they're from. Historians like Douglas Brinkley and journalist historians like Evan Thomas. I mean, these are not people who would fall for a Nixon apologist, shall we say.
Exactly, and also Amanda Foreman.
Amanda Foreman, who wrote
who
the book
lives
on,
up here. Who's,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, she has a house in Kinderhook. Oh. And she's a very fine historian, and I was honored that she also, among many others, appreciated this book.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Swift.
Yes.
Are you also the organizer of the author's appearances, the series at the Historical Society?
Yes, I founded the Distinguished Author Series.
Distinguished Author
Series. I've been doing. I'm not on the board right now of the Historical Society because after 9 years, everyone has to leave the board. But and I decided rather than try to do an extra talk for myself, I'd let someone else arrange it, and that's why I gave it to the Chatham Library.
Right.
And how do you find only distinguished authors?
Because I just figure out who's blurred my book and I invite them to speak.
Well, that's an honest answer. Boy, that's what we need.
He decides who's distinguished
exactly.
And who isn't.
Well, that's often how it goes. Hey, before you leave, I have a couple questions I'd like to ask you about my marriage.
Okay, good.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
It's good. I can I could already pick up on some things I can tell you now. I've got some answers for you now.
No, we're not married. By
no,
way.
I know. I know. I know. I get the whole thing. What do you want to ask?
No, that was a joke.
I know that was a joke, but I thought you were going to turn it into something.
My marriage is just as good as Pat and Dick's.
Good. Well, then you are a lucky man.
Although I probably drink more than both of them together.
Well, thank you so much, Will Swift, for coming. And we're told we don't mention people's names enough.
That's right.
Or
the
give
author,
them
Will Swift.
Yes. Thank you. That's right. And the thing I would say is encourage people to buy my book, because one of the things I saw, and I think it was this week in The Week magazine, that 23% of Americans said they hadn't read one book last year. So authors really need support. And that's a cause I've always been devoted to in terms of bringing authors here and making sure that people bought their books. So that's one way you can appreciate.
You Hutch Nights, it is available at our local bookstore, which we cannot
and,
name.
Well, I can say that Spotty Dog Books and Ale
I'm glad I didn't
is
name
going
it.
To be at the library, the Chatham right. Library. Okay. And you're going to be able to buy a book at that time and have it signed.
Exactly.
So
and do your Christmas shopping early.
No, it sounds like a really interesting book. And
well, thank you. I think it's a book for
reading.
Valentine's Day, which is next Friday.
I think that might be a bad idea, though, in terms of as a Valentine's Day gift. Because if you give that to the wrong person, who, you know, there's a lot of Nixon haters out there. It could be a good idea. It could make them rethink what they've thought
yes,
about.
Yes,
well,
I think
but there's a
or
lot.
Or they could throw it at you.
It
they,
should
they,
be
true,
approached.
But there's a lot of Pat lovers. I just want to make
oh, really?
One comment. The thing that I found amazing is Pat was one of the most admired women in the world on the list 14 times, and a number of those times was after they resigned the White House. They were in exile in San Clemente, and the American people still put her on the most admired list. That shows the kind of affection. She never was stained by Watergate in her terms of her reputation. Her experience was because she was had to hide out in San Clemente for a while, but people loved her. And that was because she loved people back. So.
Well, that's a good note to end on.
It sure
especially
is.
For Valentine's
especially
Day.
Especially for Valentine's.
Thank you
We've
so much.
We've been talking with Dr. Will Swift. Are you a PhD or an MD?
I am a PhD.
In psychology or history?
Yes. In psychology, I don't give pills, but I give everything else.
Oh, too bad, because I was hoping for a
How did you get into the history business here?
Well, I've had a long time interest in history. In fact, one of my first memories, great memories, was 13 watching, it was snowing and getting to watch JFK's inauguration because I got to stay home from school. But I've been writing history articles since the 1980s, and so I just always loved it, and was interested in the Roosevelts, the Kennedys, grew up around the Kennedys, and took me on to the Nixons. Who knows what's next?
Well, thank you. We can't wait till the next book, but meanwhile, we'll content ourselves with this one.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good to talk.